Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos. That's Bob Mackowitz. Two in a week, as Bob said ages ago, the Macko and Cos podcast. Now we're actually going to try.
It's the new and improved Macko and Cos podcast. Right. And then we went on a long break. So are we the new and newer, improveder?
Part two? This time it's personal? I don't know yet. I don't know.
We're going to need a name change soon.
Yeah.
I want to start with the Raps, if I can, because we've been shortchanging them over the last few months.
Yep.
But of all the Toronto stories, this is actually like a pretty good one. And since coffee is for closers, let's have a cup of coffee and talk about the Raps. What do you think?
100%. It starts tomorrow, and the NBA, they know what they're doing, and they know how to get an audience. So they gave Raptors in Cleveland prime time, and by prime time, 1 p.m. on Saturday. I'm assuming they couldn't find a way to make the game start at 11 a.m.
I think it's prime time in Dubai.
Yeah. Or like New Zealand or something. The 1 p.m. start, baby. They know what to do. Kicking off the playoffs with the Raps.
I don't know how this series is going to go. And by that, I mean, I think I know. It doesn't matter. Like, let me start with this here. Regardless of what happens in these playoffs, they go in as an underdog against Cleveland. And even though it's a 4-5, Cleveland's been quite good of late. The Raptors don't play well against top-tier competition. It'll be tough for them to win. So how much stock do you put in how they do in this playoffs in terms of how you gauge the year, which overall has been quite good?
I gauge it less in, you know, if they win or lose, more how do they look? Do they look like they belong? Do they make Cleveland work? Can it go at least six games where the fourth quarter is tight? I have a bunch of thoughts, but that is that's sort of where I start. It's like, do you look like you belong with legit playoff teams?
Even though it was a little bit lucky that they got in as the fifth seed instead of the sixth, and they took a little bit of help from like a crazy game, Orlando losing. And anyway, the point sort of being they got in at fifth. And for me, that was the big win in a way, like they avoided the play-in game. Not that it would have been the end of the world, but I feel like they've distinguished themselves as the worst of the tier of good teams, as opposed to the best of the tier of bad teams.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you're right, there was luck involved between 5 and like 9 or 10. There maybe only been 3-4 wins.
Honestly, there are a few Brandon Ingram jumpers away from being a 7 or 8 seed, and we're going, it's okay. But they did what they had to do. They made the top six. They did so credibly, largely on the strength of a 14-5 start. They've been about a 500 team since. But, you know, you'll take it. They were shit last year. Tons of injuries this year. They've been mostly healthy. They played pretty well. Unless they stink, I'm not going to put too much stock in these playoffs.
Yeah, if this is a gentleman's sweep by Cleveland and all the Raptors' losses are double digits and they won a game by 3, you know, then we reassess. But that's life. And the playoffs, everything becomes more hyper-focused, and the playoffs are much more truth-telling than the regular season. So, you know, that's what I'm excited for. It. Here's my, Bob, I'll give you my best-case scenario for the Raptors. Toronto loses in 7, the best case realistic scenario. Toronto loses in 7, but after the series is done, all the talking heads and all the mainstream media wonder, was Scotty Barnes the best player on the court between those two teams? That's the best case realistic scenario for me for the Raptors.
It's interesting you say that, because in my mind, I was thinking this. A good scenario is that people look at Evan Mobley and Scottie Barnes and say they're both really good players defensively. From that draft class, these two have emerged as two of the best pieces, behind Cade, obviously. That's a good scenario because, you know, you're getting drafted 4th overall. Now you're facing each other in the playoffs. You know, the guy who was drafted 2nd overall If you look like you're pretty much the same tier, then you did a good job picking at four, and we can feel good about that. Mobley's a really great defensive player. Here's my best case scenario. We look at it and go, Scottie Barnes and Donovan Mitchell were equally important to their teams. As soon as we can start talking about Scottie in the same breath as Donovan Mitchell's probably going to be second team all NBA. While Luka was still out and Cade was still out, there was a chance that Scottie was going to sneak in as third team. If you can start to see those guys belonging in the same bracket, that is a huge win for Toronto.
Yeah, because this is all about building blocks for the future. This playoff series is getting Colin Murray-Boyles and Jacoby Walter trying to accelerate their growth. It's about ex also accelerating the growth of Scottie Barnes, and can he get better? And can he provide more on offense? And then for Brandon Ingram, Ingram was the second overall pick in 2016, and he's got to have a bit of a chip on his shoulder that the Pelicans said, we're going to move on from you. And for him, this is a chance for him to just enter into conversations that he hasn't been a part of for quite a while.
He played 70 games this year. And for the Raptors, that is a huge victory because they've got a really good player who was underperforming largely because his health was problematic over the last few years. There's a few things I want to see, and you kind of touched on both of them there. So let me split it in two and start with Scottie. I'm really looking forward to seeing Scottie on James Harden. I'm assuming they're going to use him on James Harden quite a bit. And even if the Raps lose, I'd be okay with it if Scottie shut down James in the process.
First off, that's always fun. It's great for sports media when we see James Harden flame out in the playoffs. It's like a warm bowl of porridge, very nourishing, and it's like that's James
Comforting.
Harden, who also kind of looks like a warm bowl of porridge. But if that's one of the matchups we just want to see. Ooh, you know what, Scotty, what you want from Scotty Barnes? You
No.
want him to be like Chopper from Stand By Me. Chopper, sick balls. And in this case, Harden has the ball.
Have to say, there's a lot of ways I don't want to die, but having a dog bite my balls to death is maybe the lowest rung.
Also, you're in that rural area. You're far away from a hospital. That's a bad beat right there.
That really is. I want to see Scottie on James Harden, kind of like Draymond was on Kawhi during the playoff game, the play-in game. And he basically shut Kawhi down. Kawhi afterwards, in his laconic fashion, said, that's Draymond. He's a first-team defensive player ever, like on the all-ever team. And I'm not saying Scottie has to do that, but you kind of want that dominant sort of James just can't get going. I don't want to see him smile even once.
Side note to everything you're saying there, and you mentioned Draymond and what he did. Think about what we have going on tonight. Let's have a little CanCon for a moment. Dylan Brooks versus Draymond Green. Jesus, are either of them going to make it through the game without someone's getting ejected?
Right now, they're foiling up for the game in the spirit of
Oh,
Slapshot.
yeah. Anyway. Sorry to derail it. I just thought about that. I am so rooting for Canadian villain Dylan Brooks, and see what he can do tonight.
You want to see BI get buckets, that goes without saying. But I think you mentioned for me this the kind of quiet wild card in this series. I really want to see Colin Murray-Boyles start to step up. It's been a heck of a good rookie year, and this is he's got a game that really suits the playoffs. He's strong, he's tenacious. You don't expect him to score yet, so you can't be frustrated if he's not putting up 20 a night the way you would be, Brandon or Scottie. Really, you just want to see him be tough glue guy. He is that guy. So it's probably not going to be so great a performance that you call it like a coming out party, but I think that you just want to kind of put him more on the radar for Toronto sports fans because he's flying pretty far under the radar and he is really good.
You know what so much of this is, Bob? This is all about searching for the ceiling. We know what the floor is of the Raptors. If they're healthy, they're always going to be above 500. Like, easily. They're always going to be above 500. They have too much talent not to be. But when we focus on what can Scottie Barnes bring offensively, because that raises the ceiling. Can Colin Murray-Boyles or Jacoby Walter become what Fred VanVleet was off the bench for the Raptors in 2019. And that raises the ceiling. That's kind of what all of this is about.
It's a really great point. And I'll throw Jamal Shedd in there too, because as a smaller guy, you want to see how he's going to do in the playoffs when you can really key him. And with Emmanuel Quickley's foot being hurt, and I guess we don't really know how much it's hurt, Shedd's going to be important. It's not inconceivable that the Raptors win this series. It is a 4-5. And even though they come in 6 games below Cleveland in terms of overall wins, and Cleveland has Harden now, which just makes them one scoring option deeper, if nothing else, you know, they defend. They defend really well. I don't know if they can get enough. This is such a stupid, idiotic thing to say, but I'll go here anyway. I don't know if they can get enough buckets to win. I know they can stop Cleveland, but I don't know if they can capitalize on it enough times to make it through, but I don't think they're going to get blown out ever.
I hope not. I don't think so as well. Cleveland is a big favorite on FanDuel and all that sort of jazz. But also with Cleveland, if they lose the first game, there's a lot of weight on that organization. This is a team that hasn't gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals, that's had great regular seasons, flamed out earlier in the playoffs than was expected. Insert your Maple Leafs joke here. And if they know, if they got knocked out in the first round, there's going to be changes. You know, storms are a-coming. So there is pressure within that organization far higher than in Toronto.
That's a really good point, because people will tolerate the 4 seed for a team that really was predicted to possibly win the conference, especially with Boston having Jason Tatum out. But they understood, like, there were some injuries and the team underperformed in the first part of the year. So you kind of accept the 4 seed. But 4 seed and a first round out, it does feel like you're no longer just underperforming. Maybe you're not built right.
Yeah, like that. This is going to be a referendum on just how they're structurally put together.
So speaking of referendums on how things are structurally put together, we'll come back to the NBA in a second, but about an hour before we jumped on the Zoom call here, I get a text from Jonas Siegel like, oh, did you see that they just reached out to Sundin and they're interviewing Sundin for the director of hockey operations? And I'm talking about the Leafs, obviously. What do you make of that, Matt? What do you think of the timing of that one? Season's over, tons of shit press, and then all of a sudden on a Friday, oh, we're talking to the highly popular ex-captain about an important role, the Daniel Alfredson dust. Shine up.
Oh, Bob, I just got a text from Jonas. Wendell Clark has been interviewed for director of fan awesomeness. We could say this. It's convenient. It's convenient timing for the Maple Leafs, a team that always has a hard time finding wins in April and is trying to find another win when they've been eliminated from the playoffs. You know, there is cynicism. There's also, we wanted the team to think outside the box. I guess bringing in the ex guy isn't really actually strike that. That was dumb by me. You know what? I don't care. I wanted there because I want my member berries. I want to just make, remember when he was here and the team was heroic? You know, I'm fine with that on a Friday where it's another gray sky.
It doesn't even matter if it happens. It's just nice. You're exactly right. It was like, oh, I remember when Matt Sundin was a Leaf.
Oh, that was awesome.
Good. Oh, that was so good. The whole thing reminded me of the Melania Trump press conference when she came out to say, I never knew Epstein that well. Oh, okay. Well, no one asked, but since you cleared it up, I kept thinking to myself, like, these kinds of like announcements suggest that somebody in MLSE is in the Epstein files, like maybe Carlton the Bear, and we're going to find that out.
Okay, it's dark, but the idea, like, there's just, mascots are funny. Inserting a mascot into a horrific or gross place, there is some dark comedy. The same way seeing the Easter Bunny when Donald Trump was talking about wiping out a country, and the Easter Bunny's got to be like, wait a minute, what does this have to do with eggs?
That was must have been an interesting interior monologue for the person inside that suit, no doubt. You know what I was thinking, Maddie? Talking about captains, and I guess we'll get to Austin's noncommittal comments from the other day, but here's what I was thinking about Austin Matthews. He might be It's a weird combination of best player the Leafs have ever had and worst captain the Leafs have ever had. And we're not frustrated with him as a player in so much as we are frustrated at him as a captain.
Because a captain is supposed to set the tone. A captain is supposed to play a part of the culture, whatever you think culture is. And it's a very nebulous term that you can manipulate to whatever you want it to be. And it never, the Leafs culture, the Leafs personality has always left fans wanting. And Matthews is going to be a big part of it. Now, Matthews, he came out and said the right thing. He said, "I love being the captain here. It is an honor." Like he said, all on that side, he said all the things you want, but we don't fully buy it. Like just, and it's him and it's so many other players. It's hard to escape the cynicism bubble when it comes to digesting almost anything about the Maple Leafs. And by the way, that stinks because sports at their whole are supposed to be fun and entertaining, and this team makes it difficult to be entertained and have fun.
When he said he doesn't know the future, it's actually a fair comment. None of us do, for one. But two, there are big changes happening. We don't know who's going to take over. We don't know what the team's plan is going to be. I think we can safely assume they're not going to blow it up. They're looking at some kind of retool. But he can't commit to the team until they actually formalize that plan, put a GM slash president in place, and announce their intentions for the team. I was thinking it's probably good for him to put a little heat on the organization the way Connor McDavid has with the Oilers. It was about time that he started tapping his skate and saying, a la Nathan MacKinnon with the Avs a number of years ago, guys, we're not fucking around here. Like, it's time to get going. And so I actually don't mind if Austin is going to be a little bit tough behind the scenes, as long as it's legit tough and not Mitch Marner tough, where he just refused to answer questions and then leave.
My only pushback, MacKinnon and McDavid had more bona fides to tell the organization, hey, Matthews in the playoffs, never really heroic moments, games 5, 6, and 7 against, we talked about 100 times. That's, I think that would be my only pushback. The only thing I really wanted, the only, and this is such a, maybe a dumb media thing, and this could be a complete nothing burger, like a double nothing burger where the bun is not going to hold all the beef. But I just wanted Craig Berube at one point to say, yeah, I've got to change what I'm doing as a coach. And just like I wanted the captain, Austin Matthews, to just once get away from we or say, well, management's going to be doing this. I wanted Matthews just to say, I need to be better. I need to be part of the solution. I believe we can turn it around because I can be a better player than I've been for the last 2 years. And we never got that.
Okay, so I'm going to push back on that.
A lot to push back.
I actually kind of like that Matthews didn't say, this is kind of about me, because deep down, it really wasn't that much about him. The coach put him in a position to fail. The GM put him in a position to fail. Did he play his best? No, he didn't. He was banged up, and who knows how banged up he is, and that's an ongoing conversation forever. But it's a locker closeout day. And I kind of don't mind that he sort of said what everybody knows is true, which is if we're creating a shit sandwich here, he's not that big a part of it. He played pretty well, but he's never had line mates like this. He's never had this lack of depth behind him. The defense was terrible. The coach constantly used him in defensive situations. Like, all the numbers bear out that if he's used even 50% more intelligently, his numbers reflect that. If his line mates aren't Max fucking Domi and whatever call up from the Marlies they had, Easton Cowan's a nice kid, but let's be serious, it's a bit of a drop off between Mitch Marner and Easton Cowan. I understand your point, but for the day, I kind of like the message, which is, hey, Leafs, ball's in your court, get better. I kind of like that.
Oh, listen, the Leafs do gotta get better. Craig Berube, probably should be gone. All the numbers screaming out. That's why I first mentioned Berube. He's like, huh, we were the bottom or one of the bottom teams defensively in every category. That's on me. And just like Austin Matthews, it's like, you know what? The culture, that part of that is on me. our record, part of that is on me. I just wanted a little bit of, I wanted a little bit more accountability from Austin Matthews. But no, he wasn't put in the best position to succeed. Absolutely. Like that shit sandwich, that's Brad Treliving and that's Shanahan and that's Berube. And, you know, it's all of those guys that helped to put together that sandwich.
I actually thought it was interesting that when he was asked, does he expect to be back next year? He said, yes, Berube did. And it made me think about Rick Bonus on his exit interview saying,
beautiful, loved it,
flamethrower. You know, I kind of agree with Jeff Merrick. He was saying on the sheet, you know, he got offered a contract the next day. I think he might have known he was coming back. And he was kind of sending a message to the fans, which is, I'm part of the solution, not the problem. He's kind of painting himself like Sheriff Bonus here to clean up this town without actually saying it. And then Tom McClellan, I actually thought was much more interesting, talking about the Detroit Red Wings and suggesting after they got shellacked by the Florida Panthers in the final game, Panthers were out and the Red Wings were out. There was a nothing game. And Florida came to play and Detroit didn't. And he said, look, those guys over there, that's a championship culture, and it goes all the way to the top. He actually said that, and it goes all the way to the top. What are you basically saying? We don't have that kind of culture, and that includes the top. But here's why I bring these guys up. Because Bonus is coming back, Tom McClellan's probably coming back, and they were like, yeah, fuck these guys. Fuck this. Like, we just can't come back and do that. I don't think Berube knows if he's coming back, and so he doesn't want to stir things up too much with one of his flamethrower speeches on the last day. It's like, yep, want to come back, want to do a better job, want to do this, you know, because he knows it'd be very easy for the market to turn even more on him. And he's hanging on by a thread as it is.
Yeah, he is. But at the very least, he could say, hey, unlike all those guys, I got a Stanley Cup.
We don't have a ton of time, Matt.
We have 6 minutes.
Okay, well, you know what? I wanted to do something with you. I wanted to do a double top five because the Leafs are on the hot seat right now because they seem really greedy. And reports from The Athletic have come out how they're charging everybody for basically everything they can and cost-cutting where they can. And MLSE is about to merge with the Jays. So I wanted to put a top five together. You can go first. Top five changes you can make to the Jays to make more money once MLSE comes in.
Okay, we got like 5 minutes. I'm just going to say real quick, you get to hang out with George Bell. He teaches you how to drop kick people. That's for that's for old school.
What do you charge?
$89.95. But if you want to also learn a circle kick, that's an extra $25. How about we go there when he drop kicked Bruce Keeson? You know how Canada's Wonderland has fast passes? You have fast passes on Toonie Dog Night, so you don't have to wait in line.
Oh my God, that's actually a really good idea, and I bet that's going to happen.
For $100, you're going to get that. So there's two off the top, but I want to hear a couple of yours.
I've got Junior Jays, pay to run the bases. Hey, kid. For a price, you can run to second. Just initial here, sign here, and and then giveaway night. But instead of the team giving you stuff, you have to give the team stuff to come in. So Pelly sits at the front gate, and for the first 10,000 fans, you make him an offer, and he sees if he lets you in.
I like it. Oh, a Tony Gwynn bobblehead doll. I'll take that. How about this one, Bob? This one is the big one. For $5,000, Jose Bautista will toss a bat at your biggest villain, the person that cheated on your girl. You want to go down to the DMV, whatever. $5,000, and Jose Bautista will throw a bat at that one person you hate.
I've got cleanup crew for $1,500. You can rank second base.
Oh, that is a good one.
And third base coach. Why not? What do they do for $25,000? You can put on a uniform and coach third base for an inning.
Oh my God, that's a great one. I love that one. $85, you get to choose. You're in charge of the walk-up music. You know, you want Two Live Crew? You've got Two Live Crew. Whatever song you want, that will be the walk-up song for the players.
True or false, Two Live Crew's was your karaoke song.
True, me so horny. Everyone hated me at the karaoke bar. The bartender was laughing. Everyone else hated me.
That's awesome. This one's a little dark. I wrote Boar on the Floor Night. Have you ever seen this in Succession?
Yes.
So in Succession, if you haven't seen it and you're listening, the evil CEO gets a bunch of his chief executives together and they have to get on the floor and act like pigs and try to take sausages off the floor and from each other's mouths. I say we do that, but we get 5 12-year-olds from different minor league baseball associations, put them on the floor and get an envelope of season's tickets, and they have to fight each other for it.
Oh,
Like
Jesus, that is.
Thunderdome.
Oh, that's dark. Okay, I'm going to end mine with a happy one, Bob, because we got like 90 seconds left here. You mentioned the other day going to watch Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It's always a joy just to watch him. When you're throwing a party that you know is going to be lame, you're in charge of the corporate Easter party. You can hire Vlad, will come for 1 hour. Vlad will make any party great. He is like a walking open bar. Vlad comes to your party like when you used to pay people to dress up like Austin Powers to go to a bar mitzvah. It's Vlad coming to your party.
I love that. Like when Maestro Fresh West appeared at Corey
At
Lang's
Landsberg's
Bar
Bat
Mitzvah.
Mitzvah for Casey. Yes, and we sang with Maestro Fresh West. We
Was it
actually
Casey's
did
Bat
sing with him.
Mitzvah?
Yeah,
That's right,
at the
we did.
Bat Mitzvah.
Okay, I love this one. This is my final one. We all know the 50-50 draw, but under Keith and MLSE, I don't like that rev split. So it's now an 80-20 draw. 80 to Rogers, 20 to you. What do you say?
There's no, oh, 80% to you or to Rogers.
No, 80% to Rogers.
Oh, Rogers only taking 80%. That's very nice of them. Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.